When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, I'll have a conversation with someone in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. He is the chef owner of Boo Boy, a restaurant coming to Houston soon, we hope. He is also the winner of Top Chef Destination Canada, Season 22. Tristan Epps, welcome to the show. How are you?
Eric, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. What's going on?
Thank you for doing this. I'm excited you're here. This has been maybe not a long time coming necessarily, but I've known you for about a year. And as soon as I saw that you were on Top Chef, I mean, I'm a big Top Chef fan. So I always like to have contestants on after their time on the show to talk about it. And I think you're actually the first Top Chef winner in close to 500 episodes I've ever had. So I'm doubly excited.
Well, that's exciting. I'm glad to be the first.
All right. I always kind of like to start these interviews with the beginning of a person's career. So just tell me a little bit about how you got into the world of professional cooking. What made you want to be a chef?
It goes further back a little bit. It started with scrambled eggs and Japanese TV. Basically, my mom was a single mom. She was in the military. She, as you know, people did in the 90s, they left their kids at home by themselves for a little bit. Taught you how to pack your own lunch and go from there. And when we were in Japan, I could not watch TV in English. And the only thing that came on in English was like QVC or any of those things. And I remember them trying to like sell waffle makers, and they were making waffles and putting ice cream and stuff on it. And I'd never seen that before. I was already like a product of being Trinidadian, so always having Trinidadian food, being in different countries, so eating that food. And then trying to be American, because that is what I thought I needed to be on these like military bases. And my mom teaching me how to make scrambled eggs, like, and me seeing that like it could go from this hard shell thing to this like goopy blob to, with the addition of some heat and some seasoning, into something delicious. And then you could add cheese, and then you could add like scallions, and then you could add mushrooms. And like, it was just, I loved being able to see things be able to be combined, even though you thought it was just one thing, and it looked ever changing. So I really loved that. And it just kind of sprouted me from there.
I know you had a brief stint in Houston, like a decade ago. Mm-hmm. What brought you to Houston, and kind of where did you work? Like, what was that time like for you?
So I was in the beginning, I think, of what I thought I was becoming kind of more of an adult. I had finished college. I thought that I had basically run through all of the interest that I had in Charlotte, where I was. I moved to West Virginia to kind of concentrate my culinary training to do a like an apprenticeship. And then when I was done with that, I wanted the biggest city that I could afford. And like I just couldn't do any more mountains. And I wanted culture, I wanted good food, I wanted to speak other languages. I just wanted a scene. And I couldn't afford New York. I couldn't do Los Angeles and San Francisco, just I couldn't do. And then all of a sudden, I think like Bon Appetit came out that year and a couple other articles, and like three restaurants out of this list were all in Houston. And at that time, that was Oxheart, that was Passing Provisions, and like Underbelly. And seeing food that they were doing was just so different comparatively to what I had been trained in and what I'd been seeing. And then I started doing more research on Houston. And my father's family is from, well, and himself is from Texas. And because I didn't become like, you know, a professional football player, the only other way to make him proud would have been to move to Texas. So I like took that leap and then moved to Houston. And I worked at the Four Seasons at Quattro back when it was, is it still that? It's not that anymore.
No, it's
Toro
Toro
Toro.
Toro now. Yeah.
Yeah. Back when it was that. And then I had a stint at the Inn at Dos Brisas for a while, driving my nice hour and a half out there every day. And then did a small stint at Passing Provisions, which was one of the reasons why I really wanted to.
What do you remember from Houston at that time, or were you just kind of so focused? I mean, did you get your big city experience? You certainly didn't have to worry about any mountains.
I did not have to worry about any mountains at all. I got my big city experience almost overwhelmingly so. I lived outside the loop. I lived in like West Chase, and still thought that I was like in the big city at the time. But I loved it. I took each neighborhood one by one, and I took every day off and like discovered a new one. Went down Bel-Air, went to like I got everything I wanted, and it was like a city I can afford, a city I can eat. I went out to eat by myself a lot. Like it was the first time I felt like an adult as a chef in a city, and there wasn't anything I couldn't find. You know, like I think the restaurant was called Chaat back in the day, where it was just like, you know, a more fine dining like Indian restaurant. Like, I mean, it was everywhere. Like these were all experiences I had never had before, and they were just all within like a 20-minute drive.
How did you become acquainted with Marcus Samuelson? Because I know that that's like a big step in your career.
Yeah, so I was working in this Italian restaurant and I was very bored. And all of these other places that I were working were really exciting, but unfortunately, like I couldn't be a big boy adult with the pay that I was going to get at those places at the time. So I like stayed in the restaurant that I was at. I think I was scheduled off a weekend one time, randomly, and one of my best friends said, "Hey, that show, The Taste, is auditioning in Austin, and you love Marcus Samuelson and Luda Lefebvre and like Anthony Bourdain, and they're going to be there. And like you're gonna audition in front of them." And I was like, "That can't be true." Also, like, no, that's not, I don't want to do TV. But I was convinced. I was like, well, the worst comes to worst, I'm in Austin on a day off, and that's a cool place for chefs to go on their day off. And so I went up there, I picked up food at Whole Foods and prepped in my car to do an audition dish. And got in line. They picked me out of line. I did my dish and I ended up on the show. Marcus Samuelson was not there at the audition. Surprise, surprise. But yeah, flew out to LA like a month later, put my job on the line saying, like, "Hey, I just got on a show. Like, I don't know how long I'm going to be gone or not. Like, I don't know." And I went and yeah, I came in second place. And he basically offered me, he's like, "Well, you can go home or you can come to New York." And yeah, he brought me up to New York, and that's what made me leave Houston, which I don't know if I was necessarily going to leave at that time.
Yeah, I mean, talk about that experience working for him. I mean, were you at Red Rooster? Where were you working? And I mean, what was that like? Because like finally you were kind of getting to do Caribbean food or African influenced food. I mean, in a way that you hadn't been before, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was a complete change in what I had been doing up until my life. Like there was a point where I realized I liked my heritage food a little better. And I liked other food better than the food that I was cooking in, but I still didn't respect it in a way where it needed to be. It wasn't until Houston that I saw upscale non-European food or Japanese. And when I finally started seeing that, I was like, oh man, this is cool, but like they must be getting lucky or something like that. I still need to do this. But as I tried to start introducing those flavors into other cuisines, like into the restaurants I were in, it wasn't received well. So when I went up to New York, this was the first time I was on a line with all Black folks, right? Like Caribbeans, Africans, Latinos. Like it was very different for me. And I loved it. Like there was no more white jacket and black pants and hat. It was, and I'd already been like pushing the limit wearing a fitted hat on the line. And, you know, it was just like what we did. I mean, as you can see in the room that I'm in, like this is what a Red Rooster, it's loud. It was bright. It was like exciting for me. It was just completely different, but I still got to do that food. And, you know, I walked in trying to make, you know, fresh pasta and call things beurre blancs. And they were like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not what we're making. Like, we're not making that. Like, we're giving you the autonomy to make your food, make your food. And it was the first time someone said, make your food, but make it look like that. And we're going to fry chicken and we're going to make mac and cheese and do collard greens. And like, we're going to show that we can do both. And it really opened me up to like, I think I can do this. I think I can do all of it.
Yeah. I mean, like this is kind of the story of the last 10 years in food, right? Is this democratization of the idea of what constitutes fine dining or what styles of cuisine are worthy of attention. And it doesn't just have to be French, Italian, Japanese, right? I mean, it can be Caribbean, it can be Mexican, it can be Peruvian, it can be all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. I don't think a country's GDP should have to represent if their food is fine dining or not.
Right. And I think in Houston, like we're really primed for that, I think, because like you said, we've had Indian fine dining, I mean, for more than 20 years at this point, if you think about a place like Karen's.
Yeah.
And even, you know, in the mid-teens, you know, I think about what Johnny Rhodes was doing at Indigo with his tasting menu. And that really pushed the boundaries in the sense that, I mean, the Southern influenced food that he was doing wasn't typically part of a tasting menu. And I don't know if you ever had the chance to eat there, but it took you to a geographic part of Houston that was not associated with nice restaurants.
Yep.
And so he was challenging you not just like on the plate, but also like you're putting this address into GPS and going, wait, where the hell am I going? Like, like what are we like? Is this going to be okay? Like,
yeah.
And I think that, you know, that restaurant, kind of short-lived as it was, helped pave the way for some of the stuff Don Burrell is doing. And even I think for some of the stuff that you kind of plan to do, with Boo Boy.
Yeah, no, it did. I mean, there wasn't another city that fit for me in the stage that I'm in than Houston.
All right. So let's get into the top chef of it all. How did you decide that it was the right time in your career to go on Top Chef?
Well, I saw that shift, right? I saw the Nina Comptons, the Eric Agapongs, the Kwames, and I saw it getting closer and closer to being more successful. And I saw that the judges and guest judges coming on were like, yo, this food is really good. And for a long time, I didn't think I was like worthy of being on this show, right? Like everyone owned restaurants. Everyone had worked Michelin places, Beard Awards, nominations. And granted, when I finally got on there, I had some of those accolades, but it's always hard to like take yourself that seriously to put yourself on that stage. I think finally when I thought I was ready was when I looked beyond myself of like, am I ready? Or is the world ready to see what I'm ready to do?
Like in the first 10 years of Top Chef, it was like, this is the Italian food challenge and this is the French food challenge. And you need to be able to, you need to show, like to prove that you're a good chef, you need to show that you can make these kinds of dishes.
Yep.
And then in the second generation, it became, oh, you're a Chinese chef, you're a Japanese chef, you're a Caribbean chef. Like, this is the challenge. Figure out how to do your food within the parameters that we've set for you. And it's been, it's obviously been a very different like set of criteria and winners and people who move on. And frankly, a better show to watch, right? As a fan of the show.
Yeah. I mean, as I started to see the range start to like kind of blossom out of what people needed, I started to identify myself more there because this is an Italian challenge. I can do Italian. This was a French challenge. I can do that. Oh, we need to make pizza. I can actually do that. Like, oh, when I started to see that, like, okay, my skill sets start to actually match from making a hamburger or doing barbecue all the way to doing something Bocuse d'Or, I was like, okay, now I think I'm ready. Because before it was just like, you'd watch fine dining chefs on that show falter on a burger. And then you'd watch like, you know, the poor like person who's like, they let me on and I'm a barbecue cook, right? Like Michelle, who then ended up like not having to do barbecue at all and doing extremely well. And, you know, that's when I felt like there was that place that I can then show people range is a real thing and kind of become that little, like that little beacon for hopefully the next person to say like, oh, maybe I'm not ready. Like, oh, no. Like, yeah, I work in a sandwich shop. Like I own my own sandwich shop, but I can also still, you know, roast a whole duck. Like I can do both of those things. Like, let me get on there.
Did you practice? Did you train? Did you reach out to friends who had been on the show? How did you prepare?
I can't say I practiced. Everyone I reached out to, there was like, there really isn't a practice that you can do because you never know what you're going to actually have to do. I mean, I certainly didn't practice making pizza. But then there was a pizza challenge. I certainly didn't practice making, like I wanted to look up more desserts, but then I only ended up having to make a dessert twice. And that was my choice. Like it wasn't even something I had to do. But a lot of the things that people were telling me was like the mental aspect of it rather than like the physical and skill aspect of it. Because I think that's the hardest part is like literally the mental part.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine not having access to my phone for weeks on end and being like cut off from the world I feel like I'd go crazy.
Weirdly, it's weirdly peaceful, except for a little type A-ish people like me. Like, I just want to know what time it is. Like, I just want to know what time and what day it is. Like, That's it. Like, I can't stand when someone's like, hey, in 5 minutes, we need you to be over here. And I'm like counting.
Yeah. I'm counting the 300. Like, yeah.
Like I'm counting the 300 because like that part was a little tough for me. But yeah, it's a tough thing. It's a lot of like alone time and then a lot of like overwhelmed time at the same time. And if that's the hardest part, honestly. The cooking is the easiest part.
I mean, I've always kind of felt like there are just because in a restaurant, if you're going to put a new dish up, you workshop it, right? You come up with an initial idea, you test it, other people taste it. They give you feedback, you refine it. You know, you don't get to do that, right? Like, they give you the idea. You have a little bit of time to sort of think about what you're going to do. And then the clock starts and you got to go.
Yep.
So to hear that the cooking was the easy part is interesting, because I think that, like, conceptualizing the dish in a very short amount of time and then executing it properly is maybe, from my perspective, one of the hardest parts of the show.
Like I said, the cooking is the easy part. The conceptualizing is not necessarily the easy part, right? Like, you can conceptualize a bad dish and then cook it. Like, it's still an easy thing to cook it, right? Like, it's still an easy thing to cook, even though you're cooking it badly. But that part wears on you. You know, I've done other shows and they're like one day shoots, right? Like, so you only have to go through that mental strain for 12 to 14 hours that day. And you're like, all right, cool. I made a combination of the right decisions today and I did well or almost well or bad. But to do that, you know, four times a week, without your phone, without any sort of mental break, without any sort of way of winding down. Like, I don't know what your nightly, like, okay, the day is over. I'm already like, I'm going to scroll my phone. I'm going to look at the internet. I'm going to watch TV. I'm going to call somebody. I'm going to talk to somebody. Like, all of that is gone. And so now you're just left with the, okay, I need to conceptualize the next thing that I hope that they put up, or the dish or something. And is that the right decision? And what about everyone else cooking and blah, 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 blah. So it leaves you in your thoughts like a lot.
Did you have a goal in mind? I mean, like, if I can just get to Restaurant Wars, if I can just get to, you know, don't be the first one eliminated. I mean, did you coming into it, did you have like a goal?
Yeah. I mean, My two main goals was, you know, one, represent the culture in the best way I could. But it was like, one, like, get past the first episode. And then the next one was get to Restaurant Wars. And those were my two. After that, like, I wanted to say that I would have deemed myself successful in the venture. When Restaurant Wars ended up happening, obviously things happened and my motivation changed like tenfold, and it just made me go back to my original goal and just say, okay, now it's like, now I have to like win. Like, I have to do the absolute best I absolutely can, no matter what.
Right. And I assume most of the people listening to this have watched the season, but it was during Restaurant Wars that you found out that your father passed away suddenly.
Yes.
And that like maybe the most, like, it's not really like a feelings kind of show. But that the end of that episode, because that information was not given to the judges, and then they rendered your verdict and you won. And then you told them, I mean, even for me, cynic that I am, watching on my couch, like, it got a little dusty in the room. It was a very emotional time.
Yeah. I mean, it was a tough day. And I mean, actually we're 2 days from the anniversary of that, or 2 days past that, of that actual day. But that day put a lot in perspective of me, because, you know, I had told my dad, these were my goals. And he was just like, cool, good job, but you've already won. And I was like, no. Like, what a blessing to go on this. This is really cool. I'm going to represent the best that I absolutely can. Like, guess what? I made it past the first episode. Guess what? I won one. Guess what? I won two. Guess what? I won three. And then he's just like, I told you already. You already won this. Like, this is already yours. You've already won. Like, there's not... And so, like, it was hard to believe that until that day. And then after that day, I was like, okay, now I have to make it true somehow.
Yeah. I mean, when did you start to feel like, no disrespect to your other competitors who are all talented cooks, but like, when did you start to feel like, if I do this to the best of my ability every time, I can win this?
I think after the pizza challenge, is when I was like, okay, I think I'm a good cook. Like, I think I'm a pretty decent cook. You know, I stressed a lot about making the right decisions, and they were paying off. And they were paying off in ways that I wasn't even cooking things I wanted to cook. And that's when I was like, okay, maybe if I go cook things now that I actually want to cook, I can crush this. Because at this point, like, they made me cook with pickles. I hate pickles. Like, I hate pickles. And, you know, Tom said it was one of the best dishes.
Did you win the pickle challenge, as I recall?
Like, I didn't win the pickle challenge. My team lost, so it rendered me unable to win. But another competitor and I, Tom, said it was the best dish he'd ever had. And so we couldn't win, but we didn't lose. Plus, I had immunity that day anyway. So, like, you know, there was that. And then we had a pizza challenge, and I was going against two people who literally started their careers as pizzaiolos and made it pizza. And they had really cool last, like, Italian last names, and they didn't even need to look up a recipe, or like, they just like had it. And then, you know, I won that one, and I had to make a dessert into an entree. And then I had to make Greek food, like all things that, like, yes, I knew how to do. I have done it at some point in my life. But when I realized, I was like, oh, I'm like doing well off of things that I don't even necessarily do on a daily basis. I think, okay, like, man, let me get some oxtail in here, and then we can like really like kind of hit it harder. So, yeah.
And then just talk me through the finale, because I just think it was so ballsy to like go to Italy and be like, oh, you guys went to war with Ethiopia. Like, there was colonial war. I'm going to flip that around and serve you Ethiopian Italian food. Like if Ethiopia had invaded you instead of the other way around.
Yeah. I wanted to tell truths, and I wanted to tell, you know, an actual narrative that people don't really know. And if they did know, they only know it one-sided. So I think that colonialism had its effect on food, and it's made a lot of the cuisine that it is now. You know, there's no like, you know, obviously the reasons behind it was bad, but like the results of some of that stuff like created what we do now.
Right. Like, I love a banh mi, you know.
Exactly.
Like, thank you, French imperialism.
Exactly. Right. I love Filipino food that's got Spanish in it. I love Peruvian food that has, you know, Japanese and Chinese in it. I love Brazilian food that's got Portuguese and African. You know what I mean? Like, we call them fusions, but like, you know, it's really just colonialism that really created these things.
Right.
But yeah, like when I went to Italy, I'd been to Italy like once or twice before, and I had been cooking with two Italians, and they were just so hell bent on like Italian is Italian and you don't mess it up. And so I wanted to show the other stories of Italy that they don't really come out with, because no one ever talks about we went and lost a war. Like,
right.
No one ever says like, oh, we went, we lost, we came back. You know what? Italian food's better anyway. Like, so let's do that, right? Like, let's take your, you know, in Milan, let's take your dish, you know, ossobuco milanese, and let's just completely turn it Afro-Caribbean. But we'll make it look like yours, but we'll completely turn it completely different thing. And yeah, it was weird when I sat in front of like Carlo Cracco and other Italian like chefs. And I was like, man, I'm really about to say this. But I don't know. At that point, like, I just wanted to tell my story and the story of the food. And, you know, they liked it.
Yeah, they were really into it. You know, maybe even more than the Americans who flew in for the experience.
Yeah.
All right. So what has your life been like since the episode aired and everybody found out you won. Like, what is it? Just because I mean, following you on social, you've basically been all over the country ever since.
I have. I'm in the middle of like a little tour right now. I just pulled into Miami right before I got onto this. And I think since that day, I've been home in Houston, a combination, like in the longest stint, maybe a week and a half. And when I'm there, I'm busy. But it has just been this blessed onslaught of support and, you know, people asking when the restaurant's going to open. And, you know, I inspired them on the show and, you know, kids coming up to me saying like, hey, I'm from here and I love cooking this. Like, what could I do? And it made it very validating because that's all I wanted, right? Like, it's all I wanted was to do what Marcus Samuelson did for me, for other people, to inspire, give them a platform, give them something. They asked me why I wanted to be Top Chef. And I said, you know, I don't think Top Chef is a singular title. Like, I think it is just someone who, you know, climbs the fence first and then puts their hand down and then pulls people back up with them. And that's all I want, right? Like, that's all I really wanted. And so since then, it's been super amazing on just the support that I've gotten and people coming to dinners, and I get to finally do what I've always dreamed of.
Well, and just in Houston, you know, we've been waiting to have a Top Chef winner of our own for so long, and to have seen, you know, Evelyn reach the finals and Dawn reach the finals, and Michelle had a pretty good run, but none of them could quite get there, you know, to finally have one of our own take the title. I just think it's been so exciting. And I can't, you know, I can't really compare it to, you know, winners of other seasons, right? Like, I don't know what it meant to New York necessarily to have Buddha win, even though he was super dominant and had an incredible run across two seasons. But, you know, in Houston, there's like all this civic pride. Like, Anytime a Houstonian does something on a national stage, we just get all giddy about it.
I mean, honestly, I love that because, you know, I've worked and been around other Top Chef winners in other cities, right? Like I worked with Jeremy Ford in Miami when that happened. And, you know, I worked with the Voltage, like Voltaggio, and I've worked like with like other people, and like, everyone's excited for them, and everyone, it's like, it's amazing. They're super talented, but I don't know if like I saw the city rally around someone and be like, I don't know if they were necessarily told like, man, Miami is so proud of you. Like someone's like, I'm really impressed with you. Like I'm your fan. I don't know if that happened. Like, I don't know if people came up to Buddha and was like, man, New York is so proud of you. Like, but man, I heard it a lot from Houston. Like, just thank you for doing this for Houston. Because I just, as a person who lived in New York, no one's ever said thank you for doing this for New York, right? Like
right. You basically have to be like Aaron Judge to like, hear that, you know? Like, you have to be, win the Super Bowl,
yeah,
you know,
like,
and you then get
like,
back
win
to
a
me.
Super Bowl. You have to be like a New York team winning the Super Bowl in New York.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, and this felt so, it just felt so like, I'd never heard it like that before. And this is for me, who's moved my entire life a lot. No city has ever told me they're proud of me. Like, no, like, I've never had that homecoming before, really. And Houston gave me that. And I owe a lot to that, because it was the most endearing thing for me, is like, for a city to say, like, we're so proud of you. Not me, not I, we, the city.
Right. Yes. Thank you for winning for Houston, because, you know, we have like a little bit of like a civic inferiority complex, and we're constantly like, I've been writing about restaurants professionally for 13 years. Houston has been the up and coming food city for that entire time.
Yeah.
And I would like to not be the up and coming food city. I would just like to be a great food city.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like brick by brick, right? Like, oh, we have a Top Chef winner now. We have Michelin stars now. Like, can we stop being up and coming? Can we just be the thing?
Yeah. Right? Can we just be the city?
Yeah.
A city.
Right. A great food city.
That's it.
a nation of other great food cities. That's all we want. All right. So I have to ask you the dreaded, how's it going? I mean, you're traveling all over the country. You're showcasing Boo Boy's food. How's it going finding a location? What is your timing? You know, is 2026 the year? Like, when will we be making reservations for Boo Boy?
2026 is, you know, hopefully the year. That is the goal. I've found a few spots. I think my food has been such a, you know, and I think I maybe explained it to you before. It's like so narrative forward, at least in the beginning of this. I need the space to be on the smaller side. And there's plenty of space in Houston. They're all just very large. And I want to be able to have that interaction with people the best that I can. And you watched me go across Garden Grace, going between two floors and two things of like trying to like.
Well, I mean, that night was really incredible, right? No better illustration of your rise in celebrity than Garden Grace a year ago, when we were six people in a private dining room in the far corner of the second floor.
Yeah.
Four of which were media members and your partner, right? Yeah. There were only two strangers in that room.
Yeah.
To your recent run where it was 200 seats, sold out, full dining room, and everybody wanted their 3 minutes with you. Everybody wanted their picture. Everybody wanted their time with you.
Yeah.
And you, and like, you know, the middle ground was that dinner at June, however many months ago, I think maybe right before the show started airing.
Yep.
And you got to do the narrative thing. You got to introduce each course and talk a little about the history or the you know, whatever inspired it. And that was maybe, you know, what was that, like 20 people or 25 people?
Yeah, like 20, 24 people. And that was like my beautiful sweet spot. I felt like I got to interact. I felt like I got to cook. I got to tell the story. I got to see every person eye to eye. And be that. And so like the space that I've been looking for has to be able to do that. And, you know, I found some fell through. But I'm trying not to rush this, but at the same time, I'm trying to rush this because I'm antsy to be back in a restaurant. But I want it to be special. You know, it took me a while to get here. So, you know, a couple months won't hurt. Do it right.
Right. So no leash yet, but constantly.
No leash yet. Working. No leash yet. But, you know, spaces, if you guys see me walking around.
Yeah. If we see me walking around Montrose or the Heights or whatever, it's like.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I recognize that real estate broker. Like, this is
yeah, a good sign. Exactly.
And then I was sort of intrigued by the idea of the bear. Right, where it's like a Michelin-starred tasting menu at night, and then they have the sandwich window for lunch. Do you have some vision of that? Because the hot dog thing with you is real. And having been to June for hot dogs, I kind of want you to do both. Like, not to push you to be, like, the expectations are going to be sky high when you open, but I still, like, selfishly, I want you to do both.
No, selfishly, I want to do both. That's also been kind of the hang up on the space of what to focus on. I mean, there's no doubt that casual food sells tickets and it pays bills. And I'm realistic to know that you can't, like, someone's not going to come to your establishment three times a week or whatever to eat at, you know, $150 a person. But hot dogs is something that I think is really fun, and it's something I've always been really passionate about. And, you know, every time I get like a couple of days that I'm in between like a different pop-up or something, I love doing my hot dogs thing. And so, yeah, the hope is to have that little speakeasy hot dog joint or vice versa, and do both, because the point is not to categorize myself into like, oh, I can only have his food in this capacity. I think it is important because I grew up in this way of like, going to a fine dining restaurant was like a treat, but like, this is where I normally go and eat. And I think it's important that the community gets to eat your food in whatever capacity that is, whether it's $12 or $11 hot dog or $150 tasting menu, the experience can be the same. So, you know, selfishly, I also want to do both. So I mean, that's a thing you guys just definitely might see.
All right. Well, that I take comfort in that, because I don't like, I want, having had the tasting menu, I want the tasting menu, but having had the hot dogs, I also want the hot dogs.
Yes.
I contain multitudes, Tristan. I want it all.
I'm with you, Eric. I'm with you.
All right. Well, I have to say that brings me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you want to discuss?
No, man, you always hit the hard, you always ask the questions. You know, I always just want to continue to say, like, I'm so grateful to Houston. I think everything happened for a reason the way it happened. You know, I had only applied for Top Chef maybe once or twice before in different cities, and I don't know if it would have worked out the same way if I didn't have the support of the Houston, the knowledge that I had at the same time. And I have never been a person where, like, this is where I really want to settle down until I move to Houston. So I thank Houston for finally giving me a place to, like, want to plant something. So,
well, on behalf of Houston, I guess my role in this, you're welcome, I guess.
I'll take it. You speak for the people.
Well, I guess so. All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round.
Yeah.
Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Tristan Epps, what is your favorite ingredient?
Oxtail.
What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
Cash Money Millionaires.
What is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Tracy McGrady when he was on the Rockets.
Absolutely. What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
Oh, a Burger King double Whopper with cheese, no pickles, no tomatoes.
I like the specificity of it. And then finally, since you're traveling all the time, I know you must have a long list. What is the new Houston restaurant you haven't been to yet but are dying to try?
Let's see. New Houston restaurant that I'm dying to try.
Or in general.
There's like a Filipino.
Oh, Lumica, you know, the really, tasting menu?
Yeah. I'm really
That's
like dying
a very
to try
cool
that.
Experience.
Yeah, I'm really dying to kind of try that. I really want to like try that eventually. Hopefully soon.
It's fun. It's weird being in a random apartment sitting around a counter with a bunch of strangers, but the food's good, and there's poetry at the end. Not to spoil it for anybody.
Yeah, love that. Yeah, I want that.
Well, I hope they listen. Maybe they'll slide into your DMs and be like,
"Yeah, please.
Hey, here's when we have availability."
Yeah, I really, really want to try that.
All right. Well, in the unlikely event that anyone who's listening to this isn't already following you on Instagram, how can people keep up with what you've got going on?
Yeah, guys, follow me at Chef Tristan Epps on Instagram. It's also at Chef Tristan Epps on TikTok. And my website is EppsandFlows.com. I'll tell you where I'm at.
Tristan, thank you for doing this. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, Eric, thanks for having me.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.